Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Progressivism, it's a leech. It's a parasite. It cannot stand on its own. It doesn't build anything on its own.
I understand being skeptical of these institutions, but being skeptical of institutions shouldn't mean being skeptical of truth claims. It shouldn't mean acting like there's no absolute truth in the world.
The incarnation of Christ had never felt so real to me, because after that entire deployment, I now knew why Christ had to come into the world. It willingly comes into the world, right? It felt so real. I knew it firsthand now, just how wicked the world is.
After trying to do good works my whole entire life, I just felt so convicted and at home where I was in a Lutheran church.
Hi, this is Randy in Wisconsin. Chainsaw-wielding firewood makers love Issues Etc.
We talk about these two major landmark abortion cases at the Supreme Court. Of course, Roe v. Wade, and then lesser known, Planned Parenthood v. Casey. There is a case currently in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, that threatens to overturn both. What is this idea introduced in the Casey decision of the legitimacy of the Supreme Court? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, November the 19th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk with Dr. Matthew Frank about Casey v. Planned Parenthood and the Supreme Court's legitimacy. Dr. Adam Kuntz will join us to discuss how Lutheran preaching changed in the 20th century. Then we will study the hymn Wake Awake with Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy. Joining us to discuss Casey v. Planned Parenthood and the Supreme Court's legitimacy, Dr. Matthew Frank. He's lecturer in politics at Princeton University and co-author of a column for National Review titled Roe Undermines the Supreme Court's Legitimacy. Dr. Frank, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Todd.
We often talk about Roe v. Wade, but of equal relevance today is Planned Parenthood v. Casey. Tell us about that case.
Planned Parenthood versus Casey was a case that came out of Pennsylvania in 1992. 29 years ago it was decided. 30 terms of the court ago. We're into the term of the court that will end with the 30th anniversary of Casey. Casey was the last time that a state defending an abortion law or regulation urged the court, the Supreme Court, to overturn Roe versus Wade, which had been decided 19 years earlier. Believe it or not, while there's been a great deal of abortion litigation since 1992, there has not been one case in which the issue of Roe's survival as a precedent has been squarely presented to the court and a case been made for overturning it. All the litigation of the last 29 years has happened under the joint rubric of Roe and Casey. Casey revised Roe somewhat, abandoning certain features of its trimester framework and formulating a new, highly vague undue burden standard. But essentially, it left the regime of Roe, the abortion on demand for 9 months of pregnancy, firmly in place. And we now have in front of the Supreme Court, in the Dobbs case from Mississippi, an opportunity that has not presented itself since Casey to urge the court to overturn both Casey and Roe.
Explain the concept of the court's legitimacy in that Casey decision.
Yeah. There's a good deal of discussion by the justices in Casey of legitimacy, and it's a concept that I hear a lot from my colleagues who study and write about the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary. In the article, which I co-authored with my colleague, Professor Robbie George of Princeton, for National Review, we discuss this idea of legitimacy and observe that it's an idea that makes a certain kind of sense with our elected officials, that as long as as long as their election was on the up and up and they are acting in accord with their constitutional powers. We don't question the legitimacy of the Congress or of the President of the United States. We may disagree with what they do. They may be unpopular. They may be subject to withering criticism for what they do, but their legitimacy is not in question as long as they're duly elected to office and acting within the normal ambit of their powers. Well, the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary, of course, that's an unelected branch of government. They don't have to answer to the voters. They serve during good behavior, effectively for life or until they wish to retire, subject only to the extreme remedy of impeachment for high crimes and misdemeanors. And so the question of their legitimacy is rather different. Again, I would say, we would say, Robbie George and I do say, that as long as they're duly appointed, nominated, approved by the Senate, take the oath of office, their legitimacy is fundamentally not in question. But they too, like the other branches of government, they have to conform themselves to the Constitution. So the only thing that matters for the judiciary is that their decisions are in accord and are understood to be in accord with the Constitution and the rule of law. Any idea that the judiciary is supposed to be responsive to public opinion, the way that other branches of government are supposed to be because they have regular elections, is, we think, a terrible distortion and actually undermines the true legitimacy of the Supreme Court. Their whole purpose is to be insulated from public opinion and from answering to the public at elections in order to act in accord with the Constitution as they best understand it. So in the Casey ruling, the justices who wrote the controlling opinion in that case, Justices O'Connor, Kennedy, and Souter, writing a joint opinion, they discussed legitimacy as though it had something to do with the court's relationship with the people, that it was somehow the people's acceptance of the court as the final arbiter of constitutional law that was at the heart of the Supreme Court's legitimacy. Well, our argument in response to that is actually inspired by the reply given at the time in a dissent by Chief Justice William Rehnquist, who said, no, you've got this all wrong about legitimacy. In fact, the court's duty is to ignore public opinion and criticism of its decisions and just do the right thing by the law. And he had both a more confident and, I think, a more modest understanding of the role of the court in our system. There was a grandiosity about the O'Connor-Kennedy-Souter position on legitimacy, as though the Supreme Court speaks for the whole country on the meaning of the Constitution, and we all, you know, recognize its authority. But on the other hand, a kind of cringing neediness about the people's acceptance of that. And this was what was driving, in their own words, driving their decision not to overturn Roe versus Wade, because it would somehow harm the court's legitimacy. Rehnquist's answer was, well, our legitimacy is bound up with one thing, just doing the right thing by the Constitution, by our best possible lights, and letting the chips fall where they may.
What questions confront the court in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization?
Dobbs is a case out of Mississippi which has passed a law effectively prohibiting abortions in the state from 15 weeks of pregnancy onward. There is a limited exception, set of exceptions for life and, I believe, the physical health of the mother, but the Dobbs case presents the Supreme Court with a state law that cannot, in good faith, be reconciled with the precedents of Roe and Casey, Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And so that's why, as I said at the top, what we have for the first time since Casey is litigation in which Roe itself is at stake as a precedent. So Dobbs, for those of us who are both pro-life and defenders of the integrity of the Constitution, and frankly, you can just be the latter, right? You can be a defender of the integrity of the Constitution and not necessarily pro-life, but if you believe that the court got it really wrong in Roe and in Casey, and some pro-choice people have historically thought so, this is an opportunity for the court to get right with the Constitution and to liberate state legislatures once again to freely legislate on a subject that the Constitution clearly places in their power and not the court's.
Are you concerned that the current court will lean upon that Casey version of legitimacy, that idea again?
It's possible. It's possible that they'll do so. One reason we, Robbie George and I wrote the article was to sort of flag this ahead of time and say, look, you have two competing theses in front of you in the Casey ruling about legitimacy, one of which makes no sense and plays ducks and drakes with the Constitution and the judiciary's role under it, and one that is sound. The Rehnquist view, we believe, is a sound one. Justice Scalia, too, in his dissent in Casey, sounded a solid view of the court's legitimacy, saying in his final words in that ruling, in his dissent from that ruling, that this was a business the court never should have gotten into and it's time to get out. Well, it's high time now, 30 terms of the court later, to get out. We hope that the majority rejects the Casey thesis on legitimacy, accepts the dissenting view of Rehnquist in that case, and overturns Roe and Casey. We're quite convinced that there are six justices currently on the court who know what the right thing to do is. We hope they have the courage to do it. Simple as that.
You say that the court has a duty of explanation rather than one of persuasion. What do you mean by that?
Well, we were observing at that point in the article the fact that while the other branches of government who have to face the electorate on a regular basis have to persuade the electorate to re-elect them if they seek re-election. They have to persuade that they've been behaving well and will behave well in future. They have to meet the public's standards. The Supreme Court doesn't have that same duty. It doesn't stand for, its members don't stand for election or re-election. But on the other hand, they do write opinions. Why do they write opinions? Well, one reason might be that they too have a sort of persuasive duty or a task before them to persuade the public of something. But if you step back and recognize why judges write legal opinions in the first place, it's really responding to a duty of explanation more than anything. Immediately, that is, as a matter of first responsibility, the judges who write opinions in legal cases owe a duty of explanation to the parties in the case. Here's why Party A wins and Party B loses. They owe a duty of explanation to other judges in future who might follow the case as a precedent. You know, what are the legal principles that guided this decision? To a larger public of the legal community or the lay reader community, you might say they also have some explaining to do. But it's not persuasion after the same fashion that the other branches have a responsibility for, because they don't have to talk the public into anything. Now, of course, if their opinions fail to explain adequately, they also fail to persuade, right? If they can't soundly connect the principles of decision on which they ruled in a case to the laws and the Constitution that we can all compare them against ourselves, then they fail to explain and perhaps ultimately to persuade us that they're acting legitimately. Because like all the other branches of government, and this they do have in common, while they don't stand for re-election, the justices or judges of a federal court, they do have a duty to conform their actions to the Constitution. And actually, because judges are understood not to be discretionary actors, but acting under a kind of compulsion, they effectively say in their opinions, this is not us deciding, but the law deciding. We're the oracles of the law. The law made us do it. The Constitution made us do it. That's what they have to explain. They have to explain why the Constitution and laws of the land compel this outcome. That's what they have to explain.
And then finally, with about a minute, what ought to compel the court to overturn both Roe and Casey with their Dobbs decision?
Well, Roe has been a disaster for the country morally, politically, legally, and constitutionally. It harmed the integrity of the Constitution. It has not been in any way a settled precedent. If there are additional reasons beyond its simple wrongness for overturning a precedent, that would be it. It hasn't achieved a kind of settlement function that legal decisions should. It has instead been a bone of contention, a bone stuck in the craw of the body politic for close to a half a century now. And it's time for us to get that bone out of the throat, to spit it out and move on with democratic processes deciding these most important moral questions. This is an opportunity we hope the court will take.
Dr. Matthew Frank is a lecturer in politics at Princeton University, co-author of a column for National Review titled Roe Undermines the Supreme Court's Legitimacy. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Dr. Frank, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
When we return, how has Lutheran preaching changed recently, well, relatively recently, in the 20th century, and what brought about that change? We'll discuss that with Dr. Adam Kuntz next. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's Fables and classic children's literature, math, and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.
I cannot speak for Santa and his elves this year, given supply chain issues, but the team at Ad Crucem is hard at work to bring you your Christmas goodies as soon as possible. We are currently processing most orders within a day or two's turnaround. Check out Ad Crucem for greeting cards, gifts, Christmons, Christmas ornaments, posters, church supplies, and our brand new hot-off-the-press book about Christmons. That's adcrucem.com, A-D-C-R-U-C-E-M.com.